Einstein's classical, that is, non-quantum, general theory of relativity combined real time and the three dimensions of space into a four-dimensional space-time. But the real-time direction was distinguished from the three spatial directions. The world line, or history of an observer, always increased in the real-time direction, that is, time always moved from past to future, but it could increase or decrease in any of the three spatial directions. In other words, one could reverse direction in space, but not in time. On the other hand, because imaginary time is at right angles to real time, it behaves like a fourth spatial direction. It can therefore have a much richer range of possibilities than the railroad track of ordinary real time, which can only have a beginning or an end, or go around in circles. It is in this imaginary sense that time has a shape. To see some of the possibilities, consider an imaginary time-space-time that is a sphere, like the surface of the Earth. Suppose that imaginary time was degrees of latitude. Then, the history of the universe in imaginary time would begin at the South Pole. It would make no sense to ask what happened before the beginning. Such times are simply not defined, any more than there are points south of the South Pole. The South Pole is a perfectly regular point of the Earth's surface, and the same laws hold there as at other points. This suggests that the beginning of the universe in imaginary time can be a regular point of space-time, and that the same laws can hold at the beginning as in the rest of the universe. The quantum origin and evolution of the universe will be discussed in the next chapter. Another possible behavior is illustrated by taking imaginary time to be degrees of longitude on the Earth. All the lines of longitude meet at the north and south poles. Thus, time stands still there, in the sense that an increase of imaginary time, or of degrees of longitude, leaves one in the same spot. This is very similar to the way that ordinary time appears to stand still on the horizon of a black hole. We've come to recognize that this standing still of real and imaginary time, either both stand still or neither does, means that the space-time has a temperature, as I discovered for black holes. Not only does a black hole have a temperature, it also behaves as if it has a quantity called entropy. The entropy is a measure of the number of internal states, ways it could be configured on the inside, that the black hole could have without looking any different to an outside observer, who can only observe its mass, rotation, and charge. The black hole entropy is given by a very simple formula I discovered in 1974. It equals the area of the horizon of the black hole. There is one bit of information about the internal state of the black hole for each fundamental unit of area of the horizon. This shows that there is a deep connection between quantum gravity and thermodynamics, the science of heat, which includes the study of entropy. It also suggests that quantum gravity may exhibit what is called holography. Holography is essentially a phenomenon of interference of wave patterns. Holograms are created when the light from a single laser is split into two separate beams. One bounces off the object onto a photosensitized plate. The other passes through a lens and collides with the reflected light of the first beam, creating an interference pattern on the plate. When a laser is shone through the developed plate, a fully three-dimensional image of the original object appears. An observer can move around this holographic image, being able to see all the hidden faces that a normal photo couldn't show. The two-dimensional surface of the plate, unlike a normal photo, has the remarkable property that any tiny fragment of its surface contains all the information needed to reconstruct the whole image. Information about the quantum states in a region of space-time may be somehow coded on the boundary of the region, which has two dimensions less. This is like the way that a hologram carries a three-dimensional image on a two-dimensional surface. If quantum gravity incorporates the holographic principle, it may mean that we can keep track of what is inside black holes. This is essential if we are to be able to predict the radiation that comes out of black holes. If we can't do that, we won't be able to predict the future as fully as we thought. This is discussed in Chapter 4. In Chapter 5, I consider the question of whether the past is fixed or whether it can be changed by someone warping space-time so much that he or she can travel back in time. However, it seems there may be a chronology protection principle that prevents such warping, and makes the universe safe for historians. The holographic principle. The realization that the surface area of the horizon surrounding a black hole measures the black hole's entropy has led people to advocate that the maximum entropy of any closed region of space can never exceed a quarter of the area of the circumscribing surface. Since entropy is nothing more than a measure of the total information contained in a system, this suggests that the information associated with all phenomena in the three-dimensional world can be stored on its two-dimensional boundary, like a holographic image. In a certain sense, the world would be two-dimensional. Chapter 3. The Universe in a Nutshell. The universe has multiple histories, each of which is determined by a tiny nut. I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space. Shakespeare, Hamlet, Act 2, Scene 2. Hamlet may have meant that although we human beings are very limited physically, our minds are free to explore the whole universe and to go boldly where even Star Trek fears to tread, bad dreams permitting. Is the universe actually infinite, or just very large? And is it everlasting, or just long-lived? How could our finite minds comprehend an infinite universe? Isn't it presumptuous of us even to make the attempt? Do we risk the fate of Prometheus, who in classical mythology stole fire from Zeus for human beings to use, and was punished for his temerity by being chained to a rock where an eagle picked at his liver? Despite this cautionary tale, I believe we can and should try to understand the universe. We have already made remarkable progress in understanding the cosmos, particularly in the last few years. We don't yet have a complete picture, but this may not be far off. The most obvious thing about space is that it goes on and on and on. This has been confirmed by modern instruments such as the Hubble telescope, which allows us to probe deep into space. What we see are billions and billions of galaxies of various shapes and sizes. Each galaxy contains uncounted billions of stars, many of which have planets around them. We live on a planet orbiting a star in an outer arm of the spiral Milky Way galaxy. The dust in the spiral arms blocks our view of the universe in the plane of the galaxy, but we have a clear line of sight in cones of directions on each side of the plane, and we can plot the positions of distant galaxies. We find that the galaxies are distributed roughly uniformly throughout space, with some local concentrations and voids. The density of galaxies appears to drop off at very large distances, but that seems to be because they're so far away and faint that we can't make them out. As far as we can tell, the universe goes on in space forever. Although the universe seems to be much the same at each position in space, it is definitely changing in time. And this wasn't realized until the early years of the 20th century. Up to then, it was thought the universe was essentially constant in time. It might have existed for an infinite time, but that seemed to lead to absurd conclusions. If stars had been radiating for an infinite time, they would have heated up the universe to their temperature. Even at night, the whole sky would be as bright as the sun, because every line of sight would end either on a star or on a cloud of dust that had been heated up until it was as hot as the stars. The observation that we have all made, that the sky at night is dark, is very important. It implies that the universe cannot have existed forever in the state we see today. Something must have happened in the past to make the stars light up a finite time ago, which means that the light from very distant stars has not had time to reach us yet. This would explain why the sky at night isn't glowing in every direction. If the stars had just been sitting there forever, why did they suddenly light up a few billion years ago? What was the clock that told them it was time to shine? As we've seen, this puzzled those philosophers, much like Immanuel Kant, who believed that the universe had existed forever. But for most people, it was consistent with the idea that the universe had been created, much as it is now, only a few thousand years ago. However, discrepancies with this idea began to appear with the observations by Vesto Slipher and Edwin Hubble in the second decade of the 20th century. In 1923, Hubble discovered that many faint patches of light, called nebulae, were in fact other galaxies, vast collections of stars like our sun, but at a great distance. In order for them to appear so small and faint, the distances had to be so great that light from them would have taken millions or even billions of years to reach us. This indicated that the beginning of the universe couldn't have been just a few thousand years ago. Chronology of discoveries made by Slipher and Hubble between 1910 and 1930. 1912. Slipher measured light from four nebulae, finding three of them red-shifted, but Andromeda blue-shifted. His interpretation was that Andromeda is moving toward us while the other nebulae move away from us. 1912 to 1914, Slipher measured 12 more nebulae. All except one were red-shifted. 1914. Slipher presented his findings to the American Astronomical Society. Hubble heard the presentation. 1918. Hubble began to investigate the nebulae. 1923. Hubble determined that the spiral nebulae, including Andromeda, are other galaxies. 1914 to 1925. Slipher and others kept measuring Doppler shifts. The score in 1925 was 43 red shifts to 2 blue shifts. 1929. Hubble and Milton Humason, after continuing to measure Doppler shifts and finding that on the large scale every galaxy appears to be receding from every other, announced their discovery that the universe is expanding. But the second thing Hubble discovered was even more remarkable. Astronomers had learned that by analyzing the light from other galaxies, it was possible to measure whether they're moving toward us or away from us. To their great surprise, they found that nearly all galaxies are moving away. Moreover, the farther they are from us, the faster they're moving away. It was Hubble who recognized the dramatic implications of this discovery. On the large scale, every galaxy is moving away from every other galaxy. The universe is expanding.